100 people die every year in England and Wales as a result of medication errors. That's according to the Audit Commission. And at the root of this is poor information availability. Now, to help prevent this, one of the biggest and most ambitious healthcare computing projects in the world, the NHS's Care Records Service, is in the process of creating a national patient database for every single one of us across the country. Now, when it's fully operational, it will allow particularly important patient information to be accessible always. But members of the British Medical Association have been expressing concern about this, and so have other people. So what's it all about? Do you know about it? Do you know where your money is being spent? Well, joining us to start with is a practicing clinician based in London who is advising an agency of the Department of Health in the delivery of this database, Dr. Gillian Brownold. Gillian, good morning.
Good morning.
Can you just explain how this computer system will work?
Yes. I think that the first most important thing to try and explain is that it's not one big new system, which is undoubtedly why a lot of people would be very scared. But what we're in the business of doing is trying to join up the islands of digital information that exist or will exist in the health service. So where, for instance, most people are used to the fact that their general practitioner has got computers on their desks and they've got a very rich amount of information there, and they may well see computers in their hospitals, a lot of people, unfortunately, assume that the information is flowing accurately between the two islands, and they're not. So what the National Programme for IT is trying to achieve is the ability for the right information to be available to clinicians in a consistent way where it needs to be to help care for patients so that we can reduce the errors, as you quite rightly pointed out. Some of the concerns that both patients and clinicians have had around are the correct access controls in place to ensure that only the information that should appropriately be seen by people is available to them, and can they limit their participation? And quite a lot of the discussion that's been going on is how can patients limit their participation if they have concerns, and how can we ensure that the controls that we are building work and are safe and are working to the right level?
Can I go back a little bit? Can I just go back a bit? Because I think a lot of people are probably glazing over at this point,
sure,
thinking, whoa, hold on a minute.
Yeah.
Because we've heard about all these massive new computer databases that have been,
yeah,
put in all over the country, with Child Support Agency,
yeah,
air traffic control, passports, mm, all these things have gone horrendously wrong. And
you don't hear about the ones that go well, though, do you?
Like which ones?
There are loads of computer projects that are going well. Let me tell you about the Driving Licence Authority. It's so fantastic when you want your new licence for the car. It works. Oyster cars work. People in London wouldn't be without them. So there are computer systems that work extremely
but
well.
But this is going to be the biggest one in the world. This is the biggest,
indeed,
system in the world.
And the biggest opportunity for health gain in the world, too.
So at the moment, all these computers, these various computers, social services have their computers, which don't talk to the GP surgery. The GP surgery's computers don't talk to the pharmacist's
computer. They don't even talk to each other.
No, quite. So rather than get a completely new system, they're going to try and join all these existing ones up?
Well, there are some new systems that are being built. So certainly there are systems being built in clusters around the country. But there is an incremental pathway to that point.
What's that mean?
That means that we're moving along a pathway where you don't expect a brand new spaceship to land on your desk and say, here's the new computer system, open it up and start work. We're trying to get people to understand that each year there'll be an upgrade in the things they're able to do with the computers that are sitting on their desk, and slowly they'll start realise that they are actually being joined up and being part of a much bigger system because they're able to talk to each other in a better way than they were before.
Sounds great. That is in clusters still.
Yes.
Right. Medical records will all be on there. Who's going to put them on the system?
Well, that's why I'm explaining that they're already on the system, because
right,
it's not a question of moving something onto a new database.
Okay.
So GP records are already on their systems, and subsets of those will be available in a summary, so that the other clinicians who need to know about those patients will be available in a summary form. And the detailed part of that record is available for the other people caring for that patient in your local health economy.
OK, let's bring Dr. Paul Thornton in, who's a GP in North Warwickshire, and he's an author of a report called NHS Database Paradoxical Access. That's a cracker, Paul. This sounds great to me. What a great computer system. What's wrong with it?
Hi, Dave. Yeah, patients want information to be easily accessible to clinicians who are caring for them. But at the same time, they want information that they share with some individual staff to be strictly private and to go no further.
Yeah, but we just heard from Gillian that this was all going to be sorted.
Yeah, well, a good IT system would do that, but it's flawed on at least three counts. Firstly, the project has divided England into three large areas, and we've learned recently that if a patient needs care across the boundary between any two of those areas, the staff in the two areas will be unable to share the detailed records. And this will be particularly important for patients living in Essex but receiving treatment in London. And even very local services may be affected if they're working across that boundary. And at the same time, huge numbers of uninvolved staff will have access to everyone's records. The Essex sector extends right up to Buxton in Derbyshire.
Right, so people in Derbyshire will be able to read the records of Dave Monk in Essex.
Yes, they will be able to. They wouldn't be allowed to.
Well, that's all right then, isn't it?
Well, that depends if you regard the safeguards as adequate.
As long as you have a decent audit trail of who looks and who doesn't.
That's bolting the stable door after the horse... That's closing the stable door after the horse has bolted.
Right. All right, let's bring Gillian in on this one. Gillian?
If those are the only controls we had, I would say that Dr. Thornton would be absolutely right. But I'm happy to assure the listeners that the controls in place to limit the access to the clinical record is to the role of the person who is supposed to be looking at it. So only people with the correct clinical role and those with a legitimate caring relationship with that patient. In other words, if they are seeing that patient for care, so I couldn't open the notes of a patient with whom I don't have a relationship. The third point is that we are piloting this in order to make sure it works before we roll it out.
I need to be clear on this because I'm a bit confused at the moment. You see, if I'm up in Derbyshire and I get ill,
we'll create a relationship with you.
Right, how would you create a relationship?
Okay. Well, if you were, for instance, an orthopaedic surgeon sitting in a hospital in a ward upstairs and you came into A&E, he wouldn't automatically have a relationship with you unless the A&E doctor said, right, he's got a broken leg, we need the orthopaedic team in, and then they create a legitimate relationship for that doctor.
How long would that take?
Seconds, but that's how it works. He doesn't automatically, you can't look up his brother-in-law and get into the notes.
Right.
There has to be a proper process.
All right, Paul, what's wrong with that?
Well, as Gillian said, these safeguards are being piloted. They're not up and running yet, so they've made this massive investment, but they haven't actually got the software proven and tested to show that it works. Another component of this these safeguards involves what's called a virtual envelope, where patients will be able to decide if there is certain information that they don't want other people to see, even if they have a legitimate professional relationship. Unfortunately, it's quite clear from the Department of Health guidance that the patient's views will be overridable by the people who the patients decided they don't want to share the information with.
All right, Gillian, I don't want you to know my information, but you can override that. I don't like that idea.
There are the Department of Health lawyers are looking at the levels in which there may be the opportunity to open that envelope with a clear audit trail if the patient is unable to give consent. In other words, if they're unconscious. But those rules are very strictly audited, and they will always be told to the patient afterwards who saw it and why, because you have to declare why. And if you broke your professional codes of conduct to look at something inappropriately, you will be called to account.
But that's horses and gates, as we heard
before. Well, we're talking about, for instance, that somebody may have put something in a sealed envelope, like their HIV status, because
right.
they didn't want just anybody to see.
Yeah.
And they were unconscious in casualty, and the casualty doctor felt that there was they were stuck, and they thought it might be appropriate to look. In those circumstances, they would explain in the computer system why they had opened that envelope, and that would go to the security guardian, who's called a Caldecott guardian, who will be informed and will investigate every single case.
Can I go back to the other point that Paul made about these cluster areas?
Yes.
And somebody in Essex goes up to London, and the London cluster will not have access to the Essex cluster records, which seems to defeat the whole object.
That isn't true. The summary, which is that which an A&E doctor has defined as everything he would want to know about that patient, their important diagnoses, their prescriptions, their allergies, and their recent events and results will all be available. Of course, this is growing slowly, so the first pilots will be on a smaller cut of information than that which will be available in a few years' time. But there will undoubtedly be the information on the spine, which is that which is overlapping the whole of the country. That's what we've been charged to deliver.
All right. Let's bring Paul back on that one.
Well, I think the final thing is that it's not for Gillian to reassure me or you. It's for each individual patient to decide where they want their information to go. Now, ministers have given assurances that patients can keep their information off this database if they so wish, but that option has been removed from the information that will be provided to patients. Patients won't be told that they can keep their information off this database if they want to.
Can I go back to the cluster thing once again? Do you accept that that it's early days and, in fact, the doctors in London will be able to see the enough detail to be able to treat people properly?
They'll be able to see a summary of the patient's record.
Isn't that enough?
To most people, regard a summary as just sort of edited highlights. If you're actively sharing care, then you need very detailed information. The problem is that they've sold the system to doctors on the grounds that patients won't have to give explicit consent to the sharing of the summary information. But if the summary information contains virtually everything that's important, then there really is a clear failure to respect patient and check with patient opinion.
So this is really, your criticisms are all about confidentiality, aren't they?
That's the key issue.
All about confidentiality.
You started the item by pointing out how many deaths there are from patients getting drug reactions.
Yeah.
I think you've got to balance against that, that if patients have concerns about the safety of the confidentiality of the system, they will not come forward and tell us about the sensitive things which damage their health or which are the early symptoms of treatable disease.
All right, Gillian?
Yeah, I think it's the decision for to ask patients whether or not they would like to take part in this has been looked at in the basis of the evidence of work that's been done elsewhere within the world on this kind of work. And where you have an information campaign that tells people that we're going to share information, and if you have concerns, will you please raise them, and you do have the right to limit your participation, the evidence shows that about 17% of the population then want to find out more, and then a percentage of those, and I'm sorry, I don't have the facts and figures to my hand, a percentage of those then decide to limit their participation. There is every option to limit participation, and all the information leaflets about how to do that will be going out in a widespread public information campaign that starts this autumn.
Can I just ask you, I'm a little confused as to how much this is going to cost, because I've heard, you know, 7 billion, 8 billion, 18 billion, 31 billion, and I'm really confused.
The cost of the contracts to the commercial contract to deliver in the clusters is £6.1 billion. Now, that's the cost of providing the software for the five clusters, and that's across 10 years of NHS spending. I can't remember the percentage, but it's less than 1% of NHS spend. Now, this is the spend on the infrastructure of the NHS for IT, and any business is spending far in excess of that in percentage terms in order to make sure they've got information fit for the 21st century to look after patients.
All right. Paul, finally, it's not going to cost that much in the scheme of things, and this confidentiality thing will only affect a very small number of people. Accepted?
That's the nature of confidentiality. If everybody had STDs, then there wouldn't be a confidentiality around it. Confidentiality, by definition, only affects a minority of the population. There may be people who want to opt out of this scheme, and there is a form they can complete on the internet at www.fipr.org.
All right. Thank you very much to both of you for coming on. Now, does that make it any clearer? Because this is something that's, you may think, well, that's not going to affect me. Well, yes, it is, because it's your money that's being spent, mate.
BBC Essex. Travel News.